Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Jerry invited me to come to his room, and he had earmarked about 25 different quotations in the book. And he wanted me to sit and listen to him while he read them. And that started with, like, you know, who do you think could do this? Were you part of this?
While the early reports have brought a flurry of denials, players giving out sensitive information to the press is one surefire way to cause a division within the team.
I didn't contribute to that, and that was Horace. He was telling everything that was happening within the group.
You know, as we started winning championships, and everybody talked about Michael, and then everybody talked about everybody else, I mean, that really pissed off Horace.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
All right, game on. That's a teaser for tonight's episodes 5 and 6 of The Last Dance, the ESPN documentary on the 98 Bulls that none of us can stop watching or thinking about or talking about. And within that, we heard our buddy Mark Schanowski. Oh, young, whip-smart, damn handsome Mark Schanowski right there. In the middle of that clip, let's talk about The Last Dance and the baseball angle that exists within it with our friend Casey Johnson of NBC Sports Chicago. He joins us right now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. What's up, Casey? How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Matt? Thanks for having me.
Of course, man. Absolutely. How are you holding up, by the way, in quarantine land?
We got a hoop on our garage, so we're like a Chicago rat. We're in the alley all the time, so it's all good.
Outstanding. I've been asking everybody, what are you currently eating too much of just because you're in the house all the damn time?
Tofu.
Oh, wow. That is the healthiest and most boring answer, and it explains your physique.
You asked, man. You asked.
Yeah, serves me right. Serves me right. Casey, tell me about your relationship with Jerry Krause, especially after he was done as a basketball guy and went back to his baseball life. Because it's a really interesting career, which I want to get into. But it seems like he would sometimes call and you guys would talk, and he would even read you stuff that he was writing, right?
Yeah, I covered Jerry for 6 years as a Bulls general manager, and when he left the organization in 2003, he obviously laid low for a little bit and ultimately spent a day with me for his kind of first public interview after leaving the Bulls. Believe it or not, we fished on his boat. He's got a lake in his backyard, a small lake, and we went fishing on his boat. And, from that story, which was, I want to say, 03, a trust formed, and ultimately over the last 14 years of his life, a friendship formed. We spent a lot of time together talking on the phone. We spent a lot of time going out to lunch together. I just always found him as someone who obviously had fascinating stories and just really was looking for someone to listen to him. And I think I'm a pretty good listener. It's what I do for a living. So I just really enjoyed the relationship that kind of naturally formed over time. And along those lines, twice I spent lengthy periods of time with him for long stories that ran in the Chicago Tribune when I worked for that newspaper. including one where I went on a baseball scouting trip with him in Delaware in 2012.
Well, yeah, I want to hear about that trip. But, you know, the man's life and his career, I can't think of anyone else who's been a talent evaluator in two different sports. I mean, maybe it's out there and it exists and someone will remind me, but we're talking about like what, a 55-year career, essentially. 1961 was the first job as a gopher of sorts for the Chicago Cubs while he was in college at Bradley. And through 2016, eventually, when he stopped being a baseball scout, that's a crazy two-sport run that started in baseball, then to basketball, then back to baseball, then back to basketball, and then back to baseball, if I have it
right.
Yeah,
exactly, and I'm glad you're having me on to talk about baseball, because even though I'm more well-versed in the basketball, I know the baseball history really well, and I think it should be emphasized. You're right, Matt. It's completely unparalleled, and it couldn't happen today in today's world where, you know, all sports have become so specialized and are so consuming for 12 months of the year. But back then, you could work both in both jobs, in both pro levels, and Jerry did. He worked for MLB and the NBA multiple seasons for 6 months of the year each. There are two figures that are legendary in Jerry's career. One is the longtime baseball coach at Taft High School, where Jerry went to high school here on the Northwest side, Jim Smilgoff. And then that through Jim, he met a legendary Yankee scout named Freddie Hasselman, who kind of let Jerry tag along with him on some semi-pro and high school scouting trips throughout the Midwest while Jerry was a student at Bradley. And these two people Jerry would talk about with such reverence and so influential on his career. And, you know, the fact that he went back to baseball ultimately after he left the Bulls, to me, tells you everything you need to know about how baseball is in his blood. Another huge tie-in, which will resonate with Chicago listeners, for Jerry on the baseball front, is Bill Veeck, another person that Jerry held with such reverence. Bill actually gave Jerry a very important job in 1978. It was after Jerry had flamed out kind of in his first run with the Bulls. People may not remember, but Jerry was director of pro personnel for the Bulls in the mid-70s. Under Arthur Wirtz, and ultimately lost that job. And Bill Veeck and Jerry met at Schaller's Pub and had a lunch that turned into a dinner. And 12 hours later, Bill Veeck hired Jerry Krause, and he was working for the White Sox for the first time, because he later worked for the White Sox again in the 2000s. So pretty amazing career, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a guy who worked for a Wirtz, a member of the Wirtz family when they owned the Bulls, Bill Veeck when he owned the White Sox, and then Reinsdorf with both the Bulls and the White Sox. And you know, people may remember when Reinsdorf hires him as Bulls GM from the White Sox, he'd already been with the Bulls before that, as you're talking about, in the middle of a career that had him toggling back and forth. And he would always famously say, Casey, scouting is scouting. Like, it's he thought they were the same kind of thing. Like, You watch a player and you look to a player and you see what the talent is and you see what the evaluation is. I wonder how much, and did you talk about this ever with him, maybe on that trip you took to Delaware, how much he would look at mentality and the mindset of these kids that he would scout? Because some of the famous baseball guys that he nailed, like, he loved Ozzie Guillen. He watched 17 games in a row of Ozzie Guillen when he was in the minor leagues for the Padres, and said, that's the guy we need. And the Lamar Hoyt trade was made in a lot of ways. There's eight players in that trade, but it's to get Ozzie Guillen. And that's, you know, but we know about the baseball character of Ozzie Guillen, who ends up a lifer. Ed Farmer, Krause was one of the scouts of, and we know about the baseball character of Ed Farmer, who hung around as a lifer. So I wonder how much he looked at attitude and mentality of baseball guys and or basketball guys.
Well, he did, and then I'm glad you honed in on that, because, you know, those are the things that translate, again, regardless of the sport, and so that scouting quote would apply to that. Jerry put a lot of time into makeup of a player, character of a player, family background of a player. Those were things that were very important to him. He had a famous saying that I'm sure you've heard before, our kind of people, and that applied, you know, whether he was, you know, general managing for the Bulls or scouting for the Arizona Diamondbacks, which is what he was doing, you know, shortly before he passed. And when I spent that scouting trip with him in 2012. That's who he was working for. I got a funny anecdote. I mean, this kind of applies to character. I mean, Jerry had such a routine. He would get to the park so early and get his spot and get all his stuff in order, including his radar gun, which he didn't actually use until later in his career. He was not a big fan of technology. He was more the eye test kind of guy. But he had his radar gun. He was right in the aisle, right behind the plate. And, you know, I'm watching him scout, and we're kind of talking, you know, in between half innings. And about two innings later, a woman comes in late, third inning, sits right in front of him. And Jerry was just absolutely apoplectic. It was unbelievable to watch. It just kind of upset the apple cart. He just could not recover from that. He finally had to move so he could get a – he's like, I got to see the plate. That's what he kept saying over and over. It's just his anecdote that has always stayed with me. I wrote about it at the time, and it just kind of now brings a smile to my face.
That's great. Mark Gonzalez, your former colleague over at the Tribune, wrote a really lovely piece yesterday about Krause as a baseball guy, and it included a couple stories in there. One about a game that they were watching in California to scout Shane Mack, who went on to be a first-round pick and a five-tool outfielder in the bigs for a while. And everybody's wearing, like, these Ocean Pacific jackets and shorts and stuff. And Krause is there at the game with a fedora and a trench coat on at the ball game scouting. And I can see that's probably what – who's the guy? Hasselman? Freddie Hasselman? Maybe that's what Freddie wore as a scout, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. I read that Gonzo piece. That was fantastic stuff. But it's really cool you reach out to me to talk up on a baseball level, because – I don't think that part of his career gets enough shine. And quite frankly, it meant as much to him. You know, obviously he gets the most notoriety, and rightfully so. He's in the Ace of Basketball Hall of Fame for the six championships. But baseball was so much his first love. He was obviously a bullpen catcher at Bradley and, you know, tried out for the Taft team. You know, in reporting one of those stories that I spent a lot of time with him for the Tribune, we went back to Taft High School. We were walking around the old baseball diamonds, and he was showing me, you know, where he met Freddie Hasselman, and Jim Smogoff, the Taft High School coach, you know, he used to warm him up and things like that. And you could just see the memories and the pride that he had in kind of showing me that stuff. So really, 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 really important part of his life. Again, basketball is always going to be known for, but the fact that he went back to baseball to me kind of says it all.
Yeah, and we know that's the way that Jerry Reinsdorf feels about baseball. So it's obviously a big part of their bond that, you know, in the end, that's where the emotions get us, and it's certainly where they get me. You know, as we think about makeup and think about, I wonder, and I got to credit Krause, because he knew, and I know they brought him in and they had a conversation with Phil Jackson when it was time to get to think about Dennis Rodman. And they had, you know, and they all met together. But Krause knew and was proven right that Dennis had incredible basketball makeup as a gamer. Like, right? Just like a guy who was going to show up, and when he was there, was going to bust his ass every single time, do the dirty work, and end up being an incredible teammate on the court in that way. And you got to give Krause credit for taking that chance and knowing that that makeup was gonna work out.
Yeah, and another person instrumental in that acquisition was Jim Stack, the assistant GM at the time. He was really convinced that Rod, what you speak of, Matt, Rodman's work ethic could, you know, even though he was kind of going wayward there with the Spurs, his work ethic, even in the most wayward moments, was still prevalent and still, you know, in there somewhere. And once you got him into a structure like the Bulls, you know, and the leadership structure that was in place from Krause down to Phil, down to Michael, and you know, that they could kind of absorb and assimilate Dennis into that. And I personally am strongly of the conviction, and, you know, I may not be right here, but it's just my belief that the Bulls don't win all three of that second three-peat without Dennis Rodman in the fold. So, yeah, I mean, Jerry, you know, had to be convinced of it, but once he was convinced of it and got Michael and Phil to sign off on it, you know, again, it to me speaks to the leadership structure that the Bulls had in place from Jerry on down to Phil and then on down to Michael.
And any quarrels with The Last Dance in terms of how it's presented or how it has You know, obviously people talk about the way that Jerry is characterized, but you know the real situation. I'd like to think I do, and a lot of Chicagoans understand. But any issues with how The Last Dance has presented this stuff?
No, I mean, you know, we're through. I've seen through episode 8, so I don't want to get too far ahead. So, but I went through 4, I guess, going into tonight. So, I mean, I just got to say, you know, I understand. You know, the first 2 episodes had to set up plot and conflict and drama. I understand that. And look, it's not wrong. I mean, there was plenty of it in 97, 98. But I think what has happened is people have rushed to judge it before the narrative arc of all 10 episodes play out. So we owe it to the filmmakers to see how it plays out, number one. And number two, I think you've seen a natural pendulum swing to the other side. I think plenty of people have come to Jerry's defense beyond what his family has so graciously allowed us to do, and that's, you know, publish some of his unpublished writings. I think there's been plenty of other people kind of weighing in to offer some balance, because, you know, to say that Jerry Krause broke the dynasty is a joke, quite frankly. I mean, that's just not accurate. So, and I'm not saying that's what the film says, because I don't believe that to be the case. And I think, like I said, we need to let all 10 episodes play out. But look, it's an awesome event, particularly given when it's released, you know, with the global pandemic and all of us with eyeballs at home. So you understand why it's drawing the significance that it is. And, you know, a lot of people will be tuning in again tonight.
Yeah. All right. And in closing, Casey, the baseball and end of it, Greg Walker, another guy that that Jerry kind of saw as a Class A kid in the Philly system and convinced Bill Veeck to pick him in the Rule 5 draft. And I'll never forget when the White Sox were that subject of the MLB Network's documentary. I forget what it was called, but it was the year they drafted Chris Sale. And in that draft room, as Kenny Williams was talking to all of his people, about 8 or 9 people in that draft room, and they debated whether or not to take Chris Sale, there was Jerry Krause touting Chris Sale. So, like, I always think of that a little bit. It's amazing the tentacles of that man's scouting and talent evaluation career in both sports and how they linger.
Yeah, another guy that I'll just quickly say that he was really tight with and was on too early was Kirk Gibson. That was one of Jerry's favorite people. So, I mean, yeah, you can just go down the list. There's tons of names both on the baseball side and the basketball side. It speaks to a pretty impressive career.
Well, yeah, I mean, Kirk Gibson, talk about one of the ultimate gamers in terms of makeup right there. My goodness. All right, Casey, thanks, man. Appreciate it. Hey, what'd you think of Tom York on Fallon? What'd you think of it? Very moody. Very obviously, it speaks to the moment of the time, the emotions toggling back and forth between a tiny bit of hope, but mostly foreboding impending doom. What'd you think of the track?
I'm not the most biased Tom York person, but I will say, I'm not the most unbiased Tom York listener, but I will say I love the track. I think the lyrics are spot on, and I think it'd be cool to hear with a band. Hey, let's get a new Radiohead album out of it. That's what I say.
There you go. Unsurprisingly, that's what Casey wants more than anything out of his pandemic. Give me a new Radiohead album. Thanks, man. Appreciate you, Casey. Thank you.
Thanks for making this connection with baseball. Very cool you did this, man. Thank you very much.
All right. You got it. Appreciate it. Thanks, Casey. It's Casey Johnson of NBC Sports Chicago. Yeah, Jerry Krause, a serious, serious baseball scout with legit bona fides. When we come back, RIP to a pitcher from one of the most memorable and, I believe, impactful pitching staffs of all time. I'll explain when we come back. And then our guy Chris Kamka will do Cam Connections to help wrap up the show here on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. When I'm done, it is a Bears Sunday right here. And it is the Lions at the Bears, week 10 from 2011, a Bears blowout. If you'd like to hear some Bears football porn on your radio, listen to them pick off Matthew Stafford more than 3 times. I'm not going to tell you how many, but I will say it's more than 3. Jeff Joniak is going to offer some thoughts before we play the game. After the Bears game, it'll be Mark Grody solo right here on Sunday on The Score. Les Grobstein will be on at midnight as we restart the broadcast day. Everyone broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. We'll be right back on Hit and Run on 670 The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Yeah, I am, actually. I think this is the one time in our baseball life where we need to take our complaints and shove them in our back pocket and do what we can do. I think we can look at this two ways. It can either be viewed as kind of a celebration, and which is that's what I hope, or it can almost be a PR nightmare, and I hope we stay away from that. I hope we're smart enough that we treat this with so much respect, because there's people right now that are out of jobs that are really struggling. And if we can help even just a little bit by getting back on the field, that would be, you know, again, this would be the time to be flexible and do whatever they say to make it work.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
That was Terry Francona yesterday on Inside the Clubhouse with me and Bruce Levine. Terry Francona, the fine manager for the Cleveland Indians, formerly for the Boston Red Sox, formerly for the Birmingham Barons, and Michael Jordan in AA. Some good conversation about that on yesterday's show as well. You can go back and listen to it via podcast if you'd like. But I love that message right there from Francona, that everybody around the game, it's an opportunity to do whatever you got to do to get some games in and not make it selfish, not publicly make it, you know, too whiny. When he's talking about what the flip side could be of a PR nightmare of people hearing millionaire ball players and managers and such bitching about certain things that they have to do, bitching about how this isn't real baseball, all that kind of stuff. No one is going to want to hear that. No one. And as of right now, if they came to Terry Francona and said, 50-game expanded playoffs will start August 1st, you in? Terry Francona will say, yep, let's go. Let's go. Out of respect for the game, out of respect for what the game means to people, let it be weird. It's all right. You know, just it's anything that you can do if you're in baseball to help people get some baseball and not complain about your good fortune in life to be a part of baseball would be welcome. Love that mindset from Terry Francona. Rest in peace to Matt Keough. Do you know the name Matt Keough? Does Matt Keough mean anything to you guys? Sean Anderson, the name Matt Keough ring a bell at all? Okay if the answer is no.
Yeah, it does not.
Okay. Former Oakland A, former St. Louis Cardinal, most recently, an executive with the Oakland A's, died at the age of 64. He was one of what they called the five aces. When Billy Martin was manager of the Oakland A's in the early 80s, he had a pitching staff of five aces, and they were great. They were all very, very good. He had a terrible bullpen, so he let them finish almost every game. The numbers are ridiculous. The pitching staff in 1980 and 1981, in 271 starts, combined for 154 complete games. That is nearly 57% complete games of the games they started. In 1980, Rick Langford started 33 games. He threw 28 complete games. The leader in complete games last year was Shane Bieber and Lucas Giolito with three. Three was the most complete games in all of baseball last year. In 1980, Rick Lankford completed 28 of the 33 games he started. Mike Norris completed 24 of the 33 games he started. Matt Keogh completed 20 of the 32 games he started. Steve McCaddy, 11 of the 31 games he started. And Brian Kingman, 10 of the 30 games that he started. The five of them, they all had at least 10. Lankford had 28. Five aces. They were real good. Good team. But you might not be surprised to find out that five promising careers all ended earlier than they needed to. Would that shock you to know? Brian Kingman was done after the 1983 season at age 29. Matt Keogh never pitched past age 31. Rick Lankford was released by Oakland after starting the 1985 season 1-10. He was 34. Those guys were done. It's amazing. Steve McCaddy, I got to talk to him sometime. He is a coach in the White Sox system, is Steve McCaddy. That year, there were four of them, each threw a 14-inning complete game in 1980. Lankford, Keogh, Norris, and McCaddy each threw a 14-inning complete game. When the A's set a major league record that year with 94 complete games, Mike Norris, he threw 152 pitches to get through his 14-inning game. Steve McCaddy, take a guess, Sean Anderson, how many pitches Steve McCaddy threw in his 14-inning complete game?
174.
The answer is 207. Jeez. 207! And that's the thing. People knew it then that Billy Martin was crazy, and he was trying to, like, have a staff of five old Hoss Langbornes, you know? Old Hoss Radbornes, excuse me. Langford and Radborn combining in my head. Trying to have a staff of five of them. Nobody did this anymore at the time. But really, after that, the fact that all of their careers were derailed by shoulder and elbow injuries was the answer. They had, as I mentioned, 94 complete games in 1980, 60 complete games in 1981, then 37 complete games in 1982, down to five in 1983 and four in 1984. And I firmly believe that this overusage, overworking, and dissent was a big factor in the beginning of pitch count and the caution with starting pitchers that has changed the game forever. That's why I called him a member of one of the most memorable and impactful pitching staffs of all time, because everybody around baseball will look to that. Will look to that year and those staffs as a symbol of what you cannot do. So absolutely what they cannot do. So yes, you've seen the crazy complete game numbers that go back to the Fergie Jenkins years and obviously before that, and the big pitch count totals of Nolan Ryan and Luis Tiant in their memorable matchup in 77, I think it is. But this is 1980, all these guys throwing complete games. 28 for Rick Lankford, 10 for Brian Kingman. Everybody had in between then. Looking back, since the year 2000, in the year 2000, only one person in baseball has had double-digit complete games in a season. That's James Shields of the Tampa Bay Rays. In 2011, when he threw 11 complete games. That's it. James Shields. The last few years, nobody's had more than five since Chris Sale had six in 2016. So this, it just does not happen anymore and never will again.
And even then, look at Sale right now. I mean, Sale's arm isn't even holding up.
Dude, I'm telling you, I am looking right now at these leaders year by year of incomplete games. And there's Roy Halladay several times, and we all know that his arm fell off the table, and he still made the Hall of Fame, even though. There's Jake Arrieta at among the most complete games in 2015. He lost velocity. There's Clayton Kershaw. I mean, it's just, there's Johnny Cueto on this list. There's Carlos Martinez, who ended up with Tommy John surgery on this list. There's Noah Syndergaard. Syndergaard is getting Tommy John this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Again. I mean, beware the complete game. There's Irvin Santana, whose career fell off and fell apart. There's every once in a while you come across a guy like CC Sabathia, who is just an absolute monster and can go and go and go and go. Or Randy Johnson, who's all over this list. Or Greg Maddux, who's all over this list. But yeah.
And you,
Billy
up,
Martin. Go ahead.
Yeah, you brought up Nolan Ryan too. It was just recently the 29th anniversary of his last no-hitter. He threw 122 pitches in that one, and he was 44 years old, striking out 16 Blue Jays in 91.
Unbelievable. And a year ago today, I just retweeted this from Marquee Sports Network. A year ago today is when Kyle Hendricks threw his Maddux. And the Maddux is a complete game shutout with less than 100 pitches. Hendricks had 81 pitches. I was there at Wrigley a year ago today. 81 pitches for a complete game. And much like Maddux in his later and perhaps best years, Kyle Hendricks didn't get above 88 miles an hour. Pitch to weak contact, people. Keep the ball in front of the outfielders, like Greg Maddux told us a couple of weeks ago here on Hit and Run. So rest in peace, Matt Keogh. I hope that your arm is getting the rest that it has needed since 1980, among other parts of the body. We'll wrap up Hit and Run in a few moments with our guy Chris Kamka with Cam Connections. That's next on 670 The Score. Welcome back in on Hit and Run here on 670 The Score. Before we get out of here, I'm going to offer you a couple thoughts on the unique denial of the fifth year option on Mitch Trubisky's contract by the Bears. I'll tell you why that's unique before we get out of here. And at the top of the hour, it's a Bears Sunday, Bears and Lions from 2011, an absolute domination. And you'll hear Jeff Joniak with a few words about that before we get out of here. But we finish like we often do with our guy Chris Kamka. At C Kamka on Twitter, it is Cam Connections. We get ourselves Cam connected with the Sultan of Stat himself from NBC Sports Chicago. What's up, Chris? How are you this fine Sunday morning?
Well, I'm pretty good, Speaks. How are you? A lot of stuff going on here. You got some interesting nuggets based on some of the things you've been talking about.
Oh, you're beautiful the way you do that. The way you tie things together. This weather is glorious, but it's a little bit cruel. It's a touch cruel because there ought to be baseball in our fair city today.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
I know.
I might actually go outside today.
Don't hurt yourself, Chris. Don't hurt. And I mean that in every sense of the way, internally or externally. Be safe. Be safe out there. But did you hear that stuff we were just talking about on the complete games and the preposterous nature of Billy Martin's five aces? Just unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. It really is. And the figure that something like that actually happened during my lifetime. Now, of course, I was an infant when it happened. But, hey, I mean, it still counts. Consider this. 94 complete games for the 1980 A's.
Yeah.
You had a combined total of 87 complete games in the majors in the last two seasons combined.
Wow. See, there you go. I was trying to draw the corollary with single season complete games, but that says it even better. 87 total in the last 2 years combined, and they had 94 in 1980. Amazing.
Yeah, and off the top of my head, I can remember a few of those complete games this year, 2019, where Giolito had a five-inning one, and Carlos Carrasco had like a six-inning one. So, I mean, you're counting rain-shortened ones. And the A's did not have cheapies that year. There was one of seven innings, but that was the shortest one. There, like you mentioned, four that were 14 innings. There were nine of over nine innings that year. The longest drought they had without a complete game was six games, and that was in April. They had nine in a row in August. It was absolutely unbelievable. 58% of their games were complete games on the year. They had six pitchers that had a complete game shutout. The guy who led the team in saves, Bob Lacey, with only six, had a complete game shutout. was the only start he made. So somebody
texted that in, and I didn't realize that they were right, that he was the closer on that team, but he also had a complete game shutout. That's insane.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so many things. 94 complete games is the most by a team in a season since the 1946 Tigers. Mm. They also had 94. Since 1980, there have only been 7 seasons where a pitcher had at least 20 complete games. The last one was Fernando Valenzuela in 1986. He had 20. Bert Blyleven in 1985 had 24. Ron Guidry, 21. Jack Morris, 20 in 1983. And then the other 3 of those 7 are the 3 from the 1980 A's, including Brian Kingman's 28, which is most since Catfish Hunter at 30 in 1975.
Wow. It's amazing those teams didn't win more, too, because they had a terrific outfield. Tony Armas and Ricky Henderson and Dwayne Murphy. They had an unbelievable outfield to go along with those aces. They should have been even better than they were.
Yeah, you really think they were. And it's not like – so, yeah, in that 1980 season, Brian Kingman had those 20 losses, which is a big deal for a while until Mike Moroth did it later. But they had a 3.20 ERA by their starting rotation, best in the American League, second best in the majors. So they were completing games, but they're also really good. And that trio of guys with at least 20 complete games, they had 3 – it's the most by any team since the 1950 Braves. It's Spahn, Sane, and Vern Bickford.
Oh, see, now, I never heard Vern Bickford's name. All I heard was Pray for Rain. Spahn and Sane and Pray for Rain. We could have been here all day, and I wouldn't have been able to give you a third starter on those Braves teams. That's for sure.
Yeah, Vern Bickford played in the Players Weekend. The back of his jersey would read Pray for Rain, would it not?
Yeah, I think so. That's who he was. Exactly right. I love those. Do you remember some of the others? I remember when Texas had Aaron Seeley and Rick Helling and nobody else. They did Seeley and Helling and 3 days of shelling. Someone invented that one down there. I've always loved that.
Yeah, we did some of those last season, right?
We did.
Yeah. Those are fun. You had the White.
I think we did. Yeah.
The White Sox won a few years ago. You had Rodon and Sale and Pray for Hail.
Right. There you go. Last year, I think it was in terms of watchability, it was Gio and Cease and then, Sweet Release or something like that. We were playing around with those a little bit last year. That's for sure.
Yeah. And you also mentioned 1 year anniversary of Kyle Hendricks pitching that glorious 81 pitch Maddox. I didn't watch a single minute of that game. I was boarding a flight to London as that happened, and people are like, "Hey, can you find this?" I'm like, "Oh man, I'm not in the position to do this right now." But that happened to be on the 10-year anniversary of Maddox and Jenkins getting their number 31 retired by the Cubs. So what a great way to pay homage to Maddox himself than to toss like the ultimate Maddox in the 10-year anniversary of that event.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. I wonder, do you know what the fewest pitches for a complete game shutout is? It can't be a hell of a lot lower than that.
I believe the lowest number in a recorded complete game is, I think it's 58, by somebody named Red Barrett.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I just Googled that, and bang, there it is. You're amazing.
Yeah, Boston Braves, I think it was 1948, if I'm not right. No, 1944. Red Barrett. And obviously, pitch counts weren't a thing earlier on, so there might have been one with fewer, but you can't imagine too many fewer. But that's absurd, 58 pitches in a complete game.
Yeah, that's amazing. All right, what else is tickling your fancy here? Oh wait, here we go. Maddox threw a complete game fewer than 81 pitches only once. 77 pitch complete game masterpiece for the Braves against the Cubs in July of 97. Although it was not a shutout, but that's still pretty good. 77 is still pretty damn good.
Yeah, I know Aaron Cook had a few. I think there were under 80. Like, he was notorious for that, the few games that he had like that.
Wow.
But, I mean, that's just unheard of. I mean, think of it. There were 20 pitchers, 20 times last season, the pitchers made at least 81 pitches and got 9 or fewer outs in the start. And as it happened, the next day, Yu Darvish threw 81 pitches and couldn't get an out in the fifth inning. So, wow. Yeah, the very next day, Darvish had exactly 81 and pitched 4+.
Yeah, that was before Darvish transitioned back to being a good version of himself in the second half of the season last year.
You're not kidding, because he was tremendous going down the stretch.
Yes, he was. Chris Kamka, a pleasure to talk to you, as always. Stay safe, stay healthy. We'll do more baseball and more Camp Connections next week. I always enjoy it.
Excellent. I'll be ready.
All right, buddy. Thank you so much. That's Chris Kamka, the Sultan of Stat from NBC Sports Chicago. We're wrapping up Hit and Run right here on The Score. And I mentioned with Mitch Trubisky having his fifth-year option declined by the Chicago Cubs. I don't know if people understand just how rare it is. Was reading this morning that no quarterback as statistically successful as Mitch Trubisky has ever had the fifth-year option declined unless an injury had already occurred. Because that one is Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy Bridgewater had an 87 passer rating and averaged 7.2 yards per pass attempt. He's the only quarterback with better stats than Mitch Trubisky, who right now sits with an 85.8 passer rating and 6.7 yards per attempt. Bridgewater's the only quarterback with better numbers than Trubisky who had his option declined. And we all know that was because of the knee injury, which completely threatened his entire future. There are four healthy quarterbacks, other than Mitch, to ever have their fifth-year options declined on one of these five-year rookie quarterback contracts, first-round rookie quarterback contracts. This is this is who Mitch is with: Jake Locker, EJ Manuel, Blaine Gabbert, and Christian Ponder. Those four, who none of whom had a passer rating higher than 79, is the company that Mitch Trubisky is keeping. Those four and Teddy Bridgewater. That's it. So, you know, look, you can think about the possibility for Mitch to bounce back and become a very good quarterback. History says nope. But they've got their bet hedged with Nick Foles. This has been a really fun Hit and Run. Thank you to Sean Anderson for doing a great job all week and conversing with me and getting me ready, and also for booking and working the show today. Thank you to Casey Johnson, Len Casper, Josh Nelson, and Chris Kamka, and Danny Parkins, my guests on the show today. Have a great week, everybody. I'll be on Cubs 360 Daily on Tuesday at 6 o'clock on Marquee. Then back with you next Saturday morning for Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine, and on Sunday for Hit and Run at 9 a.m. Bears Sunday is next. Remember, by the way, that Chicago Bulls GM Mark Eversley makes his debut on The Score tomorrow morning at 8:30 with Mully and Haw. Keep it right here on The Score. Stay safe and stay sane, everybody.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.